our team has to be the first priority and client services has to be the second priority. Because if we're not healthy, if we're not in a good place, if we're not taking care of ourselves and one another, then the quality of our work is not going to be what it should be. And our clients deserve us to be at our best. So we have to start there. It's with ourselves.
Hey there, it's Winston Faircloth, and welcome back to the For Love of Team podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to helping you grow a team you love, multiplying your impact, income, and freedom in business and in life. And in this episode, I want to introduce you to my friend, Amy Alexander. She's the co-founder and executive director of the Refuge Center for Counseling in Franklin, Tennessee. And she began her journey there in 2005. Today, the center serves more than 30,000 counseling sessions to over 4,000 clients annually. And as executive director, Amy encourages and supports a culture of connection, character, and continuous growth within the organization. And that's why I invited her to the podcast today. She has a very unique way of framing leadership and culture and values within her organization, modeling a servant-first perspective that so many leaders talk about, but Amy and her team experience and model for her clients. I know you're going to enjoy this podcast with my friend, Amy Alexander. Amy Alexander, welcome to the For Love of Team podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I am absolutely thrilled to be here.
Well, Amy, you and I have met each other a couple years ago at a mutual friends event in Franklin, Tennessee. Why don't you give us a little bit of your introduction, your background? Tell us about the organization that you founded and that you steward today.
Well, I'd be glad to. So again, my name is Amy Alexander, and I am the co-founder and executive director of a Christ-centered nonprofit called the Refuge Center for Counseling. We are located in Franklin, Tennessee, which is a small suburb of Nashville, although we do serve people in 17 counties throughout our state. And my dear friend Jennifer Gillette and I started Refuge Center back in 2005 with the goal to do a couple of things. You know, one was to pair excellence and affordability. So we wanted to provide counseling services to all kinds of people in all walks of life with many different presenting concerns, and to do it with a high standard in terms of the overall experience. We also feel that experience is just as important for our team members who are here serving, but to make sure that our services were affordable and accessible to everyone. So fast forward, you know, nearly 16 years, and we now have about 80 team members. We provide about 33,000 counseling sessions every year for about 4,100 people. We see mostly calls for anxiety, depression, PTSD, sexual trauma, divorce adjustment, grief and loss, et cetera. The average human struggle, you know, at every point, all of us will go through something difficult or hard, and we're going to need somebody to walk with. This is just human stuff, and suffering does not discriminate. So we do all of that here, and we do it on a sliding fee scale so that anyone can access it.
Yeah. And it's such an important mission, and especially with a lot of the conversation recently, you know, with the Olympics just passed and so many people talking about the mental health challenges that they've had given the pandemic and racial strife and everything else. It's just such a timely topic. Could you just speak to the mission and the work that you're doing and some of the things that you're experiencing right now in, you know, given what we're all coming out of with the pandemic?
Well, absolutely. You know, we've seen a 22% increase in request for services consistently month over month since the pandemic began. You know, if we ever thought of mental health as that thing over there or that person over there, which we do, we have these stereotypes about mental health. We think it's someone with quote unquote mental problems or a mental breakdown. And the truth is we need to normalize and humanize mental health. It's our, you know, our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors. It's how we handle stress. It's how we relate to others. We all have this. I recently read that someone, they define mental health as that little voice in your head that you've been hearing for as long as you can remember. And so many people have a little voice in their head that tells them things like you're unworthy, or because of what you've been through, you're unlovable, or you have failed, or you're not enough. And that little voice is quite prevalent in their life. And it's our relationship to that voice and the things we do to create new beliefs about ourselves that really is our mental health. And so the pandemic has leveled the playing field, unlike anything we've ever experienced in our lifetime. I think the average global citizen now would say they very much understand anxiety or helplessness or depression, because we've all experienced those things.
And it's and you've been at this now for 16 plus years, building building the service brick by brick, person by person, case by case, and you've managed to assemble a very capable and talented team. And so today we're really here to talk about, how did you do that? How did that come to be in terms of developing a culture that really fits and supports the mission?
Absolutely. Well, the people that work here are our first priority, because the more we can pour into our team, the more supported they feel, the better they can do at supporting and caring for our clients. And, you know, of course, we're therapists, right? So we look at lots of therapeutic models and philosophies. And something that always interested me was an organization out of Spokane, Washington. They are called the Circle of Security, and their work is really phenomenal. It's certainly worth looking up. And they talk about a lot about the parent-child or caregiver-child dynamic and what it means to be a safe haven and secure base. And I started thinking about that work. I also started thinking about the work of Daniel Siegel, who's done so much for us in terms of defining attachment. And I became very curious as a therapist about how to translate this language and these models from a therapeutic model, as in therapist-client or a parent-child dynamic, how do we translate this to leadership? So we've used the tenets of our work and translated those to now what we call an attachment-based leadership model. Daniel Siegel, as he teaches us about healthy attachment, which he defines as being bonded to one another in a positive way that allows us to relate from a place of kindness and compassion. And, you know, I think we all need that in the workplace. But there's four ways that this happens. It's when the people you work with feel seen, safe, soothed, and secure. And I can go into much more detail about that, but that's become the tenet of our attachment-based leadership culture, that people would feel seen, safe, soothed, and secure.
And what a contrast to the way that most of us learned leadership, right? Growing up in organizations where it was more command and control, C words, not these S words that you just mentioned.
Well said. Well said. This is a different way of relating to people. You know, seeing someone is not just seeing with the eyes, but it's perceiving someone deeply and empathetically. And for that to happen, for you to really see the people you work with, you have to know some of their story. You have to understand them in terms of context. And we're talking about their needs, their triggers, perhaps their Enneagram type. We need to understand not just their professional experiences and their resume, but we need to understand some about them personally as well. Transitioning into this idea of safety, this means that we know enough about someone to hopefully avoid actions and behaviors that would harm them. And once you know someone's story, you will hopefully have a sense of things that could be triggering to them in a work environment. For one person, this might be that in their past, they didn't receive adequate or frequent feedback about their performance. And so they're very uncertain about their contributions and value to the organization. For another person, feeling unsafe might be tied to conflict without a clear timeline or format for a resolution process. So when we know each other in context with our stories, then we're able to help people feel seen and safe. Being soothed, this is also part of those four S's, is knowing that hurt and misunderstanding is inevitable. It's inevitable in the strongest families and work cultures. Therapeutically, we call those ruptures, and ruptures occur because we are human. But in this model, what matters not is there a rupture, but how do we repair it? How do we repair it? It's brave apologies, it's humility, and it's how we seek to soothe each other when we are hurt, scared, or confused. And then finally, Winston, that last S of feeling secure in the workplace, If you were to look on that circle of security model, you'd see a pair of hands, and it's from this secure base and safe haven that the child launches. Maybe at 2 or 3, it's their first time on a slide. At 9 or 10, maybe it's a sleepover. At 16, it's keys to the car. But kids need to be able to launch from parents and then return back to them and process the feelings of becoming independent. And we feel the same way about the workplace. We want supervisors to be a secure base for staff to launch from. That means trying new things, exploring new solutions, perhaps trying new products. And if I feel that you are for me, that you're on my team and you really know me, then I feel secure enough to go out and be really creative.
Talk a little bit more about brave apology. Those two words just kind of leapt into my ears when you said that. That's a novel concept in a lot of organizations.
It is. It's a term that Brené Brown uses often as she trains on leadership. And, you know, here, tandem with brave apologies would be courage, which we define as not the absence of fear, but the judgment that something is greater than the fear. So it's always scary to say sorry. Always. But it matters a lot. And humility is a characteristic that we are absolutely looking for in any new hire. We're looking for people who are constant learners, willing to try things new ways, and willing to say, I'm sorry, I missed the mark, or here's the part that I can own.
So this leadership framework really gives you an ability to attract and retain certain employees, team members that are coming into the organization. How does this also shape your overall cultural dynamic?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're in an interesting field because the majority of therapists that move into the field professionally launch into what we call a private practice, right? So this is where they are on their own, independently operating, perhaps with their own LLC, but just they unto themselves. And you can do fairly well financially in that model. And so as a nonprofit, we are always wrestling with how do we retain really quality people when those sorts of options are out there. And for us, it's our culture. This is how we retain people, is this ability to be in a community with what we define as the 3 C's, that you are working with people who are of deep character. Okay. And there's definitely ways that we're defining that. That you're working with people who you have a genuine connection to, and then that we are a community of continuous growth, that we are always learning and growing together. It's that iron sharpens iron mentality.
So, Amy, in terms of the how these values and culture really apply to the daily work that you have at the Refuge Center, can you give just a story or two about how these play out in your day-to-day work?
Well, I can. And, you know, just principally, I would share that as a Christ-centered organization, we have a statement of faith, but we also have something called a spiritual expressions document. And that is the fulfillment of how we live out our mission here together. It's the practical ways that we live out our faith in this place. And it talks about, of course, we value service, connection, humility, rest, forgiveness, transparency, etc. But we get real practical with it. In fact, before you are ever hired or even given an interview, you're given this document just to say, hey, transparently, here's who we are and here's how we do life together. This means that we routinely pray together. We integrate prayer, devotions, and meditations into our meetings. We share sermons or faith-centered podcasts. There's a lot of ways that we are practically living out our faith. And for us, that's about congruency. So we define congruency as that our actions are compatible with our values, that our insides match our outsides. And that matches what we're doing with clients, right? Someone comes to us, they have a lack of peace in their life, they're distressed. Well, are their actions in reflection of their values? That's something we would need to look at. And we want that happening at Refuge. But there's so many stories. You've seen our cultural model, this infographic that we use, and there's a lot of ways that we do the things we do. One of my favorite pieces of that graphic is the generosity, right? Which is that we do not operate from a place of a mentality of scarcity, but a mentality of enough. And that is potentially unique in the nonprofit sector. I think when you're trying to raise money and you need community support, it can be very easy to feel like there's not enough, but we just sort of refuse that ideology. And so in this idea of generosity, we have created a director of compassionate care. So this is a senior staff position whose job is to pour into the people that work here. That's a line item in the budget for us, the director of compassionate care. And their job is gift baskets and prayer and visits at home or in the hospital. It's planning quarterly potlucks and golf outings and time with horses and equestrian events. And it's just everything you can think of to help us grow in our sense of compassion towards one another.
That is amazing. I love that so much.
Thank you.
So this journey of how you got to this culture, how you helped craft this culture, this isn't something that was there on day one, or was it?
Oh, no. No, it wasn't. This has been something very organic. It's evolved over time. It's something we evaluate frequently. 16 years later, there's things that we may have done in the early years that made a lot of sense then and were very adaptive and functional for us. Here now in 2021, we recognize we've grown a lot as an agency, and we still need to this to be a living, breathing thing that we're always going, how do we do this better? How does it make sense for where we are today?
And when you think of, I mean, you talked about the spiritual expressions document, and that's one way that you demonstrate the values of the organization to potential new members of the team. Are there other ways that you mentioned as before we started recording here about your onboarding process? Could you share a little bit about how you lay out the culture and the values with your team?
Definitely. Okay. So I might want to answer that two ways if it's okay. I
sure.
want to be sensitive to time here, but there's almost two things I'd like to focus on. One is that we do a 90-minute culture onboarding for every new team member. That includes interns or long-term volunteers, board members, anyone involved with the organization. And we take time to sort of build out this infographic. We call it our professional acre. And there are metaphorical images on this document that help us to understand the things that are the most important to us. And again, it all ties back to those three C's of character, connection, and continuous growth. So it's about doing our part. It's about having integrity. It's about, just one practical example is this idea that we can't be connected to one another if we're not accessible. So here at Refuge, we say that if you're not in session or supervision, your door needs to be open. And we ask you to walk the halls. For us, it's a big circle. So make the loop at least once a day. And if there's an open door, step in and say, how's your day going? Is there anything I can support you in? Anything I can pray for you on? Any resources I can point you to? And these kinds of conversations lead to really genuine relationships. At Refuge, we've had people get to know each other through our organization who became roommates or started businesses together or ran marathons together. That's what we're going for culturally, real relationships that long outlast the life of maybe someone's professional tenure here. So that's just on one side of it. Winston, I would say that going back to these four S's, which are just paramount to us in this attachment-based leadership, back to that original S of seen, knowing your team. So at the very beginning for us, this is back to the interview process. We're asking very intentional questions like, has there been an event in your life which was so intense it permanently affected your outlook on life? What beliefs or values guide you? Talk about your primary response to feedback, fight, flight, embrace. We're asking very deep, very intentional questions early in the process. Once someone is hired, one thing that I love, we do this thing where if your supervisor is connected to you before you even start your first day, before all that onboarding paperwork, we want you to take that person to coffee and ask them to bring three items of meaning or significance that represent who they are. So someone may bring a photo of their family, a cross, a favorite book, and we just use that time to informally really get to know them, get to know their story. We hand out a questionnaire about your strengths, your passions, your attachment needs. And we use personality inventories like the Strength Finders, Values in Action, the Enneagram, and the DISC. So getting to know people and helping them feel seen in your organization is tremendously important to secure attachment. And then those ongoing things like potlucks, experiential retreats, having themed years with activities that tie back to that. people also feel seen when they are honored and celebrated. So you got to have a line item in your budget for staff appreciation, you know, baby showers, wedding showers, intern or volunteer celebrations, celebrations around launching, coming, going, launching, promotions, and then really honoring the unique gifts and skill sets that people bring. So there's a lot of ways we can be more intentional.
And I think that is the underscoring word right there, intentionality, right? Everything that you've mentioned has been crafted with intentionality. What drove you to put a culture together with this kind of intentionality? Was it other experiences in other parts of your career, or what kind of shaped that for you?
I think so. You know, I had been in other places, other nonprofit settings, and certainly there's lessons learned there and always things you might want to do a little bit differently. But I just kept thinking about how we connect what we know therapeutically and what matters in a therapeutic environment, in the therapeutic relationship, and how do we tie those principles back to our organizational culture and leadership model. And it's made for a lot of congruence in terms of the language we use and the way we relate to each other. It feels very natural here to do that, not just with our clients, but with each other.
Well, I can imagine there are a lot of people listening to this going, gosh, how can I work at the Refuge Center with such a rich and intentional culture that you've described here?
Well, I appreciate that. It's something that matters very much to us. And no matter what we accomplish in terms of number of clients served or a capital campaign we're in the middle of, you know, what matters the most to us is that people genuinely feel cared for and seen in this place. And everything else is just kind of gravy.
You know, Amy, so many people who are building an organization, you know, one of the things I notice about founders a lot of times is that their focus initially is on the service and then the clients, but then the team can really be an afterthought. It sounded like you kind of reverse engineered that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I would say our team has to be the first priority and client services has to be the second priority. Because if we're not healthy, if we're not in a good place, if we're not taking care of ourselves and one another, then the quality of our work is not going to be what it should be. And our clients deserve us to be at our best. So we have to start there. It's with ourselves.
Beautiful.
There is maybe just one thing that's tremendously important for me to share with leaders. And that is we have to do our own work. Okay. And by doing our own work, I mean, who are the people in your life at your table that are addressing your blind spots with you? I call those our iron sharpens iron people. And research says that all of us need about 4 to 7 of those people. I think it's really hard for leaders, though, to find safe places. And so we can't give what we don't have. We can't give help when we're not asking for it. And we have to invite people into our lives who can do that deeper dive with us. It might be a therapist. It might be a spiritual director, or a life coach, an acupuncturist, a small group, Celebrate Recovery. But we have to be intentional about inviting people in to help us do our work. And one of the things I would say is that going back to Circle of Security, they had this video, this beautiful video, it's called Shark Music. And when you pushed play, you saw these beautiful feet walking down a sandy path, and ahead was the sparkling ocean. On either side are these palm trees in the wind. And there's this classical music playing. It's peaceful, and you're heart rate slows down and your breathing slows down and you're thinking, boy, I would love to be there. What a gorgeous place. The scene stops and it starts again. And this time it's the same exact imagery. Okay. Palm trees, sand, sparkling water. But this time it's the music to Jaws that starts. And so now you're thinking, uh-oh, I got this all wrong. This is going to get bloody. I don't want to see this. Heart rate goes up, breathing goes up. The point is that we all have our own shark music. We all have some music playing. Maybe it's past traumas and wounds. Maybe it's a current state of anxiety. But our shark music is coloring the way that we are experiencing people and circumstances. And we all need to do work around our own shark music. It's going to make us better leaders.
That is going to land. Oh, my goodness. That so many leaders probably play to their own shark music when they're not even listening, right? Because they are playing the shark music and they're not even being present with the person across the table from them.
Well, it's become a way of living or leading. It's become a template, maybe even for survival. And it's not always conscious to us, but that's where we have to invite people into our lives to do this work with us.
So how do we find those 4 to 7 people?
You know, that's such a good question. And I meet with many people frequently who would tell me they have trouble perhaps even identifying one. Thank God if you have a list that includes 4 to 7 and beyond. But the places that I just mentioned are fairly good places to consider starting. AA creates a wonderful structure for safety. Many times, things like Celebrate Recovery or small groups, a therapist, a spiritual director, a life coach, people that are bound by confidentiality can typically be trusted to be a safe place for your hurts and wounds. And that really is the goal of therapy. It's to overcome the burdens, barriers, and shame stories that prevent us from living a full and free life.
So what are the best ways for people to connect with you and the organization?
Yeah, so our website is therefugecenter.org. You can also email us at info@therefugecenter.org. And I love to come and do trainings for companies on attachment-based leadership. I would do a much deeper dive than what we've had time for here today. But I would love to have ongoing conversations with companies about how they can improve the felt experience and quality of the environment for their team members. We also have a YouTube channel with a number of wonderful stories from our clients about who we care for here and how we do that. So check that out as well.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for sharing this wonderful framework in terms of your culture of character, continuous growth, and connection with an environment where people feel safe, secure, seen, and soothed.
Oh, thank you so much.
So what'd you think of that podcast interview? Man, some great nuggets. Amy is going to be a tremendous resource for so many leaders out there in terms of her framework. I think this conversation just could have continued on and on, talking about how her culture is so unique and so needed in this era. So when you think about it, how about a business you love supported by a team that you love? What could be better than that? I believe that For Love of Team is a leading indicator of your future success, multiplying your impact, income, and freedom in business and in life. Be blessed, friends. I'll catch you on the next episode.